If you don't know, this Advent season, we are in a collection called Songs of Advent. I don't know if you know, but there are four songs that are highlighted throughout the Christmas story, throughout Scripture, specifically in the book of Luke. It's the song of Mary. Oh, thank you. Bye, buddy. I love you. He said amen once. First word. PK, let's go. The song of Mary, which we covered last week, the Magnificat. The song of Zechariah, the song of the angels, and the song of Simeon. And each of these songs, they offer us a unique perspective and understanding of Jesus' arrival. You know, last week we unpacked Mary's song, the Magnificat, how we talked about our culture typically silences the voice of Mary. But her song was a revolutionary, powerful, bold, prophetic, hopeful song that's still relevant today, especially with everything going on in the world. And today we're going to be looking at Zechariah's song. Now, the song of Zechariah is called the Benedictus, and which is the Latin word for blessing, which is found in the opening line of the song. The Benedictus is Zechariah's song. But before we read Zechariah's song, I'm not going to sing it for you. I'm going to spare you the torture of doing that. But before we read and dive into Zechariah's song, it's actually important to know Zechariah's story. Because how many of you know you can't understand someone's song until you understand their story? And that's what we're going to dive into right now. So if we look at Zechariah's song, which we will in a little bit, Zechariah's song is like really similar to Mary's song. There's similar beats, there's similar cadences, there's similar themes, a similar structure. But when Mary is visited by the angel, there's a difference. She has her entire life ahead of her. But when Zechariah is visited by the angel, he doesn't have many years of his life left ahead. Right? Mary has most of her life before her, hopes, dreams, aspirations. Zechariah has most of his life behind him. Now, it's important to remember this Advent that God visits both the teenager and the senior citizen. God visits the young and the old. Most of y'all young, but this is good news for someone like me and Fatai that are a little older here in this community. There are some of us who feel like Mary, right? We feel unqualified. We feel inexperienced. We feel unprepared for what God has put before us. But there are some of us, even though you may not be old in age, that feel like Zechariah. We feel like we're behind. We feel like our best days are behind us. We feel crippled by the weight of regret from our past. And we feel way older, way further along than we actually are. Right? Mary had her whole life ahead of her. Zechariah had his whole life behind him. But the angel visits both of them. And that's the beauty of the Christmas story. So regardless of where you find yourself, the message of Advent is that God visits you where you're at. Now, let's talk about Zechariah. Zechariah, he had known waiting his entire life. You know, my son, he is very bad at waiting, right? Whenever we have something planned for him, you know, we've been starting this Christmas tradition where we put up stockings, and every time Zion wakes up from his nap, I put a fruit snack inside his tiny little Z stocking, and I've trained him from the moment he wakes up to say, "Christmas, fruit snack, Christmas, fruit snack." And so I bring him to the stocking. He reaches in with his grubby little hands, and he pulls out a little fruit snack, and he is just joyful and delighted and elated. But some days it's hard for him to wait until his nap to get to that fruit snack. Sometimes he'll wake up in the morning and be like, "Fruit snack, fruit snack, fruit snack." I'm like, "You gotta wait 6 more hours, bro. You gotta wait till after your nap." And all throughout the day, he's like, "Fruit snack, fruit snack, fruit snack." And you know, just like Zion, I think a lot of us have a hard time waiting. Zechariah had known waiting his entire life, right? When he and his wife Elizabeth, when they got married in their younger years, like all Jewish newlyweds, their dream as a couple, like their sole reason for existing as a unit, as a married couple, were to have many, many kids. Back in the days, every Jewish household, every Jewish couple, they dreamed of having a large family. But do you know why? It's because there was prophesied a coming Messiah. And so every Jewish couple, they would try to have as many kids as they possibly could because they never knew, maybe that next child born just might be the Messiah, the deliverer of their people. And so every married couple, they carried that theological hope, that theological dream that we're going to have so many kids and maybe God will bless us with the Messiah, the promised Savior. Now on the outside, Zechariah and Elizabeth, they had all the godly qualifications. They were that it couple at the church. Every church has one, right? Like ours might be like John and Soph, right? We look at them, they're like the perfect godly couple. Like we look at them, we're like, we want to be just like them. Zechariah and Elizabeth were this couple. Luke describes Zechariah as a priest. But not only was he a priest, it says that he and Elizabeth were righteous in the sight of God. That both of them observed all of God's commands blamelessly. I don't know if you know, that's a huge deal. If the author is saying that you are blameless in God's eyes, that means you're doing something right. Right, on paper, if there was ever a couple that had all the right qualifications to be blessed with so many kids, it would be Zechariah and Elizabeth. They were the ones who did all the right things. They prayed. They served the Lord. They attended church faithfully. They were righteous. And so people who are reading Luke's account of this, they're reading Luke 1, and they're thinking, surely, Zechariah and Elizabeth, the author's going to say, they're blessed. They have a huge family. They got like, you know, they can start their own reality show with how many kids they got, right? They are blessed. Surely they're going to be blessed. They're probably blessed with many children. And it wouldn't even be surprising if one of their kids was the Messiah. That's what all the signs are pointing to. That's where this text is going. But then Luke, as he's writing this, he pulls a complete 180. And this is what it says in Luke 1, 6 through 7. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive. And they were both very old. Like, to add insult to injury, like, not only did Luke say they can't have kids, they're barren, but he ends with they're very old, okay? Like, if someone describes me and that's what they end the sentence with, like, come on, bro, like, they're very old. And the question then becomes, how could it be that these people that love God with all of their hearts, who keep all of his commands so faithfully, who are righteous in the eyes of God, how is it that they could not receive all that they were longing for? And you know, this is the paradox of faith that so many followers of Jesus, so many of us, experience to this day. And it's this. How could it be that you could be doing all the right things, yet receiving all the wrong answers? How is it that you could be doing all the right things, yet be receiving all the wrong answers from God? And how many of us have been there? God, I've been serving you faithfully and obediently. I've been reading the word. I've been praying. I've been engaging in the spiritual practices and disciplines. But why is everything in my life falling apart? God, I've been doing the hard work of healing and maturing and going to therapy and working on my issues. Why am I still single? God, I've been working hard, not complaining, putting my head down and trying to be thankful and grateful. But why am I still not where I want to be in my career? And what's tragically ironic about Zechariah is what his name actually means. The name Zechariah means he whom the Lord remembers. Remember, in ancient Jewish culture, your name was more than just something you gave your barista at Starbucks for your drink order. Your name was like a one-word moniker that encapsulated everything that you were. It was your identity. It was your destiny, your nature, your essence. And so Zechariah, his name is he whom the Lord remembers. He grew up believing, yo, I am who the Lord remembers. That's who I am. That's my identity. That's my destiny. That's who God has created me to be. But what happens when your name is the Lord remembers, but your entire life you feel like the Lord has forgotten me? What happens when God has given you a promise and a name, but everything in your life seems to be the opposite of what he said will come to pass? I don't know if you know this, but my real legal name is Michael. I know it's kind of disgusting, right? Michael Cho, Pastor Michael Cho. I don't seem like a Michael, but that's actually my legal name. I've been deceiving y'all for years. There was a phase at the last church I was at, my pastor was trying to make this like rite of passage moment for me. And he's like, he brought me in front of the whole congregation and he was like, from henceforth, he will no longer be known as Pastor Mickey. But now as he steps into maturity, he'll be known as Pastor Michael. And so I hated it. For the next 3 months, people were like coming up to me, hey, Pastor Mickey, I'm Michael. And like, they're like trying to honor me and, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, I came up to my pastor. I was like, we got to change it back to Mickey. It's just not who I am. Like, I can't be Pastor Michael. But still to this day, people that were there at that church during that season still call me Pastor Michael sometimes. And I hate it. Anyway, my name is Michael. But funny enough, I was not named after the archangel Michael in the Bible. My parents actually named me after their favorite artist of all time, Michael Jackson. So they're huge fans of MJ, so much so that instead of dedicating me to the King of Kings, they dedicated me to the King of Pop. Anyways, the name Michael, if you don't know, means who is like God. And, you know, every so often, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm like God. Like, I'm made in his image, I'm beautiful, I'm a son. But every so often, I look at myself in the mirror, and I think, I am so not like God right now. Like, I'm supposed to be a pastor, Pastor Michael, who is like God. Why do I love horror movies? Why is Halloween my favorite season, holiday in the entire year? Why am I so proud that when my son tries to say the word quack, he actually says the word Why do I lose my patience so often? Why do I complain so much? Why am I so short? Why do I get discouraged so easily? What happens when your name doesn't match your experience? This is what we find with Zechariah. And maybe you don't know the meaning of your name, but maybe you've heard pastors and people pray over you. You are highly favored, but your life, everything looks the opposite of being highly favored. Maybe God said, you are not forgotten. And you've heard pastors say that to you. But every single day in your life, you feel like you've been overlooked by God. What happens when your name and the promise that God gives you doesn't match the experience of your life? This is Zechariah. And so imagine Zechariah. He's supposed to be the one who the Lord remembers. But for most of his life, he's felt forgotten by God. And finally, we get to this passage here in his old age. He doesn't have any kids. And he and Elizabeth, they've watched all their friends have kids and raise big families, all the while they haven't been able to have any. He's watched everyone around him get the very blessing that he's been desperately praying for while they've received nothing, experiencing a lifetime of shame and ridicule and doubt, wondering, God, are you really for me? Are you really good? Are you even on my side? Have you forgotten me? Reflecting on Zechariah, Barbara Brown Taylor, Episcopal priest, she said, she wonders if Zechariah's response was not so much the sin of disbelief, but rather the failure of imagination. The fear of yet more disappointment and a lifetime habit of hopelessness. That's tragic to me. A habit of hopelessness. How many of us have been there? How many of us struggle to pray or believe because we're so scared of being disappointed again? For how many of us has hopelessness become a habit? How many of us have been wondering why God seems to be blessing everyone around us while skipping over us? And not only that, but answering our very specific prayers in the life of someone next to us or around us. This was Zechariah. And so we get to this point in this story where in his old age, Zechariah, after living habitual hopelessness, he musters up the heart for one last ditch effort. Luke says one day many priests were gathering by the temple, waiting to be selected to perform temple duties. And Zechariah was one of those priests. Now, the thing you have to understand is this. Let me give you a little Jewish history. It's that only a select few priests would be chosen to actually enter into the temple to perform their duties. And so as a priest, theoretically, years could go by without you ever being called into the temple. Can you imagine? Like, you show up for work, and for years, you don't get called in at all. And so it was a huge honor to be chosen to do temple duties because it didn't happen all the time. And so what the priests would do, they would cast lots. There would be so many priests outside the temple, they would cast lots to determine who would go into the temple that day or that season to perform all of these temple duties. And on that day, out of everyone who was selected, Zechariah was one of the priests who were selected. But not only that, he was assigned not just to do, you know, clean the bathrooms or, you know, do all these. He was assigned the most important job that day. He was assigned the role of offering incense to God. Now, this was like a once-in-a-lifetime privilege. Some priests never got to offer incense to God. Only a few select could have the privilege of being able to say they did this. Why? Because it meant that you got to stand right outside of the veil, right between you and the Holy of Holies, which was the manifest presence of God. And all that's separating you is this veil. Basically, it was the closest that you could get to the presence of God more than anywhere else in the world. And so Zechariah, he's like, I've been chosen. I get to go into the temple. I get to draw nearer to the presence of God than anyone else here into the holy place. And he's thinking, maybe this is my last chance. Maybe this is the last time that I'll get a chance to be this close to the presence of God and to pray my heart's desire. Right? I just imagine Lose Yourself by Eminem playing. You only got one shot. Do not miss a chance to blow. And he's like thinking, this is my last opportunity. Maybe God will answer me this time. And so he enters into the temple. And as he's in there performing his religious duties and he's praying, God, please give us a child. Please give us our heart's desire. An angel named Gabriel shows up. I don't know if you know this, but Gabriel actually shows up to Zechariah before he shows up to Mary in the story. Zechariah, he encounters this angel Gabriel. Gabriel shows up and says, Zechariah, God has heard your prayer. You and Elizabeth will have a son. Now, you're reading this. You're like, hell yeah. Like, I would be so hyped. I'll be overjoyed. You think as someone who's been praying for this for so long, someone who's believing God to answer this one prayer, that he would be overjoyed. But this news is too unbelievable, too shocking, too impossible, too good to be true for Zechariah that he's like, nah, it can't be. How is this possible when me and my wife are so old? There's no way. In other words, years of disappointment after disappointment have brought him to a place where he can't even see that the very thing that he's been longing for is right in front of his eyes. How many of you know that disappointment often blinds us from the very answers to our prayers that God is giving us right before our very eyes? Sometimes we're so hardened that we can't even perceive what God is doing in front of us. You know, for the longest time, I told you I was the thirstiest single man in my 20s ever in existence. I wanted a wife so bad. I wanted to be married. I wanted us to buy a couch and sit on it and watch Netflix and be by the fireplace with our dog. Very specific image and dream. I was the thirstiest single man in all of my existence. And during that time, I was always asking God, where's my wife? Where's my partner? Where's the person that you promised me? Because I don't know if you know, but my pastor's pastor one time, we were in a prayer meeting and he's like praying for everyone, but I'm playing guitar so he can't pray for me. But then at the end, after he prayed for everyone, he locks eyes with me from across the room. And this is an old school pastor. Like, he does things the old way, Pentecostal way. And he looks at me, he locks eyes with me, and he starts walking over to me with purpose, like the Terminator. And I'm just playing my guitar. I'm like just trying to chill. Like, hey, everyone's getting prayed for. I'm just trying to set the mood, trying to set the vibe. He's walking at me like full speed. This is a very gentle, soft-spoken man, but he's moving with authority. And I've never seen a pastor do this, but he gets out a jar of oil. Like, where'd you get that jar of oil from? Like, he just pulled it out of his pocket like it's nothing. He doesn't just, like, dab his hand. He starts pouring it, like, profusely over his hand. Like, it's, like, dripping. And then he slams it on my head. I'm, like, up against a wall. He's like, And he's just praying over me. But the one thing he prayed is, I feel like God has a partner for you that he's going to bring into your life very soon. Oil is dripping into my eyes. It's, like, painful. It's dripping down my face. It's messy. But I held that. But you know what happened? Years went by. I didn't even have a girlfriend. I didn't even have anyone that I was dating, not even a potential. I was like, God, I thought you promised me this thing. Why am I so lonely? But I remember at the end of that season, right before Chris and I started dating, I was praying before God. And I was saying, God, why aren't you like solving my loneliness problem? And I remember him saying something very specifically. He said, look around you. And you know what? During that season, not many people could say this, but I was basically on staff with five of my best friends at a church. And it was our dream in college. Hey, let's serve God. I know we're kind of lame. Let's serve God together, right? Pastors, let's serve the Lord and let's build his kingdom together. And I realized that I'm serving God in a church that I love with all of my best friends. How often can you say that I get to be working, making my living with all of the people that are closest to me? And I heard God say, you're not lonely. You just haven't seen what I've given you right here, what's been there all along. And so many of us, you know, we're like Zechariah. We can't see the blessing that God has given us because we have been jaded for too long. We're not able to see it because disappointment has blinded our very eyes. And so, in this story, Zechariah can't believe the words of this angel. And so at this point, the angel, he's getting frustrated. And you know, I like to say, you know you messed up when you're frustrating an angel, okay? You know you did something wrong. But the angel says this, this is still going to happen. You're still going to have a kid, whether you believe it or not. But because of your unbelief, you're going to be unable to speak for the next 9 months. So, you know, we know the story. Zechariah, he comes out of the temple for the next 9 months. He's unable to say a single word. And just like the angel said, Elizabeth becomes pregnant in her old age. The angel's words come to pass. Now, fast forward, 9 months go by, and God fulfills his promise. Elizabeth gives birth to a son. And after 9 months of silence, the first words that Zechariah utters are this. His name is John. And immediately after he names his son, his mouth was opened up and he was able to speak again. And it was at this moment, as he held his son in his arms, the very fulfillment of the promise he's been praying for his entire life, where Zechariah begins singing this song to the Lord, the Benedictus. Right? Doesn't it add so much more weight to the song we're about to read, knowing this history, this backstory, than just reading it? And this is the song that he sings. Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, because he has come to his people and redeemed them. He has raised up a horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David, as he said through his holy prophets of long ago. It's a long line for a lyric. Salvation from our enemies and from the hand of all who hate us, to show mercy to our ancestors and to remember his holy covenant, the oath he swore to our father Abraham, to rescue us from the hand of our enemies and to enable us to serve him without fear and holiness and righteousness before him all our days. And you, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High. For you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. That's the Benedictus. Now, there's two things I want us to draw from this. There's many things we could draw from this. You could unpack line by line, but two things that I feel God's speaking to us in this season of Advent. we can learn from Zechariah's song and his story. The first is this: even in the silence, God is working. Zechariah's song, it could actually be broken down into two parts. I don't know if you noticed. The first half, it focuses on Israel's history, God's history with his people. And then the second half is like a love song to his son. It's addressing his son, John, the miracle child. Now, why does Zechariah sing half of his song about God's redemption of Israel when his miracle baby was just born right there? It's like that, you know, you ever ask a relative to pray for the Thanksgiving meal and they pray for everything but the food? Like, I have a relative that, like, whenever he prays for the meal, he'll, like, pray for the nations and pray for all the starving children and third world countries. And we're just trying to eat our meal. And he's praying for everything. And Zechariah, he sings this song after the birth of his miracle baby. And he spends half of the song singing about his nation's history, about how God has moved in Israel. Why? You know, some scholars believe that Zechariah's 9 months of silence actually mirror God's silence with Israel. Up to this point, it had been 400 years since God had last spoken through a prophet to the nation. It had been 400 years since Malachi prophesied about the coming Messiah coming to rescue his people. And as the years passed, the people began wondering, where's God? Why isn't he speaking anymore? Why isn't he sending any more prophets? Will what he promised ever come true? And what Zechariah's song reminds us is that even in the song, even during those 400 years of waiting, God never stopped working. What if Zechariah's song reminds us that even in the silence, God doesn't start moving? He doesn't stop moving. He doesn't stop working on our behalf. Even in the waiting, God doesn't stop turning his gears and making things happen for us. You know, I used to hear this story and think, Zechariah, you did not believe. You frustrated an angel. Like, who does that? Like, your unbelief, the reason why you were unable to speak for 9 months, it was a punishment from God. God was punishing you for your unbelief. He was saying, bad boy, and he was shutting your mouth because you didn't believe what God was doing for you. I used to think that. But I find it interesting. If you go a few verses later, we see the angel, the very same angel, he actually appears to Mary and tells her that she will give birth to the Messiah, the Savior of the world, even though she was a virgin. And her response actually sounds really similar to Zechariah's. She asked, how will this be? You know, we applaud Mary for her faith, yet we scorn Zechariah for his unbelief. But I want to flip it. I want to offer a unique perspective. What if Zechariah's muteness wasn't a punishment from God, but a gift from God? What if Zechariah's silence wasn't a punishment, but an invitation into something God was doing in and around him? You see, in the time of silence, when Zechariah was unable to speak, something begins changing inside of him. After Elizabeth gives birth to John, Zechariah bursts into this joyful, spirit-filled, prophetic song. And the question is, what transformed this man who questioned God and argued with an angel into someone filled with the Holy Spirit who sang a prophetic song of salvation and freedom? I believe the silence transformed him. Rich Velotis, who's a pastor in New York, he says, what God does in us as we wait is often much more important than what we are waiting for. Maybe the silence you're experiencing isn't a punishment from God, but a gift from God. Maybe your waiting isn't a punishment because of your unfaithfulness, but it's an invitation into God's faithfulness. Maybe it's an invitation into something deeper, something more than the very thing that you are waiting for. You see, after 9 months of silence, Zechariah bursts into the spirit-filled prophetic song, the Benedictus. See, how many of you know that in the silence, in the times of waiting, in the times where you're wondering, God, why aren't you speaking? That there's actually a song being written on the inside of you. And when God brings you out of your season of waiting, out of your season of silence, there's a song that he's written during that season that is bursting to get out of you. A song that's just not worship unto God, but a song that prophesies to those who are in the middle of their waiting. A song that gives hope to those who are in the middle of their silence. A song of deliverance, a song of God's faithfulness and goodness. And people need to hear that song. You know, I share this story often because it's one of the most powerful things God did in my life. I didn't have a great relationship with my dad growing up. And I had been waiting and waiting in my college years for God to reconcile that relationship. But it was not happening. And as I was waiting, and as I was waiting in that season, I could not hear the voice of God. I was wondering if God was ever going to reconcile this relationship between me and my dad. And I was there in the season of silence. But in that season, God was writing a song on the inside of me. And there finally came a time where I reconciled with my father. I talked with him. We were praying in the living room for the first time in our entire lives. He brought us together. And all of a sudden, this song wanted to come out. And I remember that happened on a Wednesday. I drove back up to my college fellowship that next day on Thursday, where we did a prayer gathering every Thursday. And I got up on stage and I shared my song. And it wasn't a song. I didn't actually write lyrics, but I shared my story of how God had reconciled my relationship with my dad. After I got down from the stage, so many people came up to me and said, I don't have a great relationship with my dad, but I needed to hear that story today. See, the song that God is birthing inside of you in the silence, in your waiting, is a song that needs to be released. It's a song that people need to hear. So even in the silence, God is working. But the second point and last point where we'll park and we'll end. Even though we're not faithful in our waiting, God is faithful in his coming. Notice that the angel said, you did not believe my words, which will come true. What's he saying? Despite your unbelief, despite your doubts, God is still going to come through on your behalf. You know, the angel, if I was the angel, I was like, sheesh, like, you don't believe me? Fine. You didn't believe my words? You're not going to receive your gift anymore. You're not going to receive the promise. Like, you didn't believe? Find someone else. Find another angel. Find another God. But no, the angel said, you didn't believe my words, okay? I'll take it. I'll take the L. But they'll still come true. See, how many of you know that God's ability to be faithful isn't dependent on our ability to be faithful? God is faithful to come through even when we make a mess of things. God is faithful to come through even in the midst of our doubts and disappointments and unbelief. God is faithful to come through even when we fall short, even when we let him down, even when we're in the depths of darkness and hopelessness and despair. God is faithful in his coming even when we're not faithful in our waiting. I told you the story earlier of my season of singleness, which lasted a very long time, by the way. But when I look back on that time, I'm like, there's so many things I cringe at. But not only that, there's so many ways that I was unfaithful to God. So many times I questioned him and lashed out at him and doubted him. And so many times where I was unfaithful. But you know, recently, I don't know why, maybe it's just the emotions of having our kids and the holiday season. But I've been thinking a lot about Krista. I've been thinking about my wife. I've been thinking, man, I'm so thankful that God didn't give me a gift that was a result of my faithfulness. That was a reflection of how obedient or how good I was to God. He gave me the best wife that I could possibly have, despite my unfaithfulness, despite my seasons of whining and doubting and begging and desperateness. God, despite my unfaithfulness, was faithful beyond my wildest dreams. And I think some of you need to hear that message today, because you're looking back on your life, you're looking back on these seasons, and you're like, the thing that God has for me is going to be so pathetic because I haven't been faithful, I haven't been good. The word for you today is God's still going to blow your dreams. He's going to blow past anything that you could ever imagine, despite your ability to be faithful or not. Despite when we are unfaithful, God is faithful in his coming. So I want to close with this thought. Are you experiencing silence in your life as Zechariah did? Are you in the thick of waiting for something that you believe that God spoke or believe that God promised? Is your name, is the thing that God has spoken to you, is the promise that God gave you so far removed from the experience of your life and you're just in the thick of that? Allow Zechariah's song to give you hope today that even in the silence, God is working. And that even though we're not faithful in our waiting, God is faithful in his coming. Let's pray. Hey God, we thank you that you are good. We thank you that if Advent reminds us anything, is that we, in many ways, did not deserve the gift that you gave us in Jesus. We didn't deserve the grace that you poured out upon us. We didn't deserve so many things. Yet you loved us so much. And though we were in many ways unworthy, you called us worthy of your love, worthy of your gift, worthy of your grace. And today we remember as we look at Zechariah's story and his song that even in the silence of our lives, and even in the perceived lack of you moving or working, we can believe that beneath the surface, you are working all things for our good. I speak that over people's relationship statuses. I speak that over people's careers. I speak that over people's families. I speak that over people's well-being. I speak that over people's destinies, that even if we feel like we're behind and we have so much regret and so much of our life behind us and we're wondering, God, are you ever going to come through on our behalf? Are you ever going to bless me as you're blessing those around me? We can be sure that you're doing something in our waiting. You're producing something in the middle of our silence. So would you encourage us with that truth today? And the second thing, God, even though we're not faithful in our waiting, you are faithful in your coming. Even though we often complain and we're unable to see what you're doing and we're often not grateful and we're often in a sour mood and we often doubt and we often have so much anxiety that we carry and all of these things that are twirling inside of us like a raging storm, God, despite our unfaithfulness, you are always faithful in your coming. And not only are you faithful to do the bare minimum of what we asked, you go above and beyond it. And I speak that to every person here, whether they feel like they're failing or they're succeeding, whether they feel like they've been faithful or unfaithful, whether they feel like they've been a rebel or a runaway or someone who has been welcomed into your kingdom, who is thriving and obedient, wherever they are at, you will be faithful in your coming in their lives. You will blow them away with the dreams and the things and the future and the destinies that you have promised for them. And so today we sit in that truth. We believe in the God who, despite our unfaithfulness and our waiting, are always faithful in his coming. God, we thank you that that's who you are. And this Advent season, we remember that in the midst of our waiting, in the midst of our silence.